Chad, I think you made a mistake in the itinerary. This is not under the radar here. This is actually, oh, wait, it is the Pac-12.
Come on, John. Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD. This is our continuing 2019-2020 preseason coverage. Tonight we have the Pac-12 conference, as John just told us. It's a conference that did put three teams at the NCAA tournament last year, albeit one of them in the first four. But put a team in the Sweet 16 and, well, again, only a three-bid conference for what's supposed to be a Power 5 conference is not that good. But
Was that the first year that they failed to put anybody in the top half of the bracket, or had that happened before? Anybody know?
That did happen a few years ago Colorado won the auto bid, and
you're right, because I think Colorado was an 11 seed, and then Cal was in the first four. I think I remember that.
No. Yeah, but the Pac-12 maybe it could be better this year. I guess it's tough to be worse. But Rocco, you are a Pac-12 guy, so let me start with you. And who do you think the best team is in the Pac-12 heading into this season? And I'll give you permission to choose your own team if you want to.
Well, Chad, for the record, I am a all 32 conferences guy, but I have a good familiarity with the Pac-12. I had the opportunity to attend media day last Tuesday. It was a great opportunity to meet with a lot of the coaches and players that they brought, and really cool experience. So, as of last week, we weren't sure on the status of Enfale Dante of the Oregon Ducks. He's an impact transfer, big-time NBA prospect, and it was just announced that since that day, he will not play until at least December 14th. He has not been admitted to school.
You kind of need that to play, don't you?
Yeah. So you know, I still will go with Oregon. I think they, with Peyton Pritchard and all the experience he brings to the table and his leadership and the length that they have with Francis Okoro in the middle, they get Shakur Jewiston, who was a great player at UNLV, to come over. They also get Anthony Mathis to come over. Chris Duarte is one of the best JUCO players that came out. Every year, it doesn't matter how many guys leave. Like last year, they lose Bol Bol and a plethora of others. They just reload. They find ways to get that roster built back up. And I think with just Dana Altman's coaching pedigree and the way that he grooms his teams throughout the year, like we saw last year, they'll be ready come March.
Yeah, and Joe,
sort of build on Rocco's point and get more of his thought, this was an Oregon team that was really largely disappointing throughout November, December, January, and even in the February. But by the end of the year, I mean, they were thundering down the stretch. And it's odd because they would not have made the NCAA tournament without the automatic bid. We know that factually from what committee members have said. But they were playing like a top 20 team at that point in the year and made it all the way to the Sweet 16. So,
exactly, yeah. So last year, of course, Bol Bol goes down early in the year, a five-star recruit, done for the season. Lou King didn't play until January, another five-star. So it took Lou King until late February to really get into the swing of things. They also have Wooten and White and some other key players there that helped them finally start gelling towards mid-February, and they were just a freight train. They had, as Joby could tell you, they had Virginia on the ropes for most of the Sweet 16 game.
Yeah, but actually, we just lost Joby, so we'll try to get him back here in a second. But Salika, your thoughts on Oregon and what they're looking like in terms of heading into the season and their schedule too, especially with missing a key piece here in the early part of the season.
Well, for starters, Oregon actually ended up, I believe, as a 12 seed last year. So they actually ended up being Wisconsin, and I think it was UC Irvine that they
The Ducks Eaters game. We were so excited about that.
The Duck Eaters game?
Yeah, the Ducks and Eaters game.
Okay. Sorry, John, go ahead.
But again, they were a little bit of a late bloomer last year, but better late than never. And they'll certainly have some tests beginning this year. They'll have a neutral court game against Memphis and Portland that's supposed to be a reincarnation of sorts of the PK-80. Not as many elite teams, but at least you will have a nice doubleheader. They'll also have some games against Houston. They'll also be part of the Battle of Atlantis that involves Seton Hall and most likely Gonzaga.
He's back! He's back! He's back! Joey's back!
That was crazy.
All right. Well, Sleeka, you got cut off. I'll let you finish, and I'll put the puppet on mute here for a moment, and then Joby, I'll get your thoughts.
But after Atlantis, they're going to be going to Michigan, and beyond that, they'll just have their typical slate of bye games going into Pac-12 play.
Joby, now that we have you back, we're talking about Oregon at the top end of the Pac-12. A couple of double-digit scores gone, three if you include Bol Bol, but at least two gone. And Bracco says that Dana Altman just reloads it. Do you see that again? Well,
and one person that was not mentioned by Rocco, which he listed off all the new guys. They also have C.J. Walker coming in. I don't know if that was mentioned since I was off. I mean, this is a really good team if the pieces come. And while, Infale Dante won't be back till December 14th, I'm confident he will because it's a waiver – I feel really sorry for him. He took the, he advanced his classification in order to get in this year, and then this waiver process. I know it's laughable to say this, but I actually do believe the NCAA will actually get off their rear ends and do it.
It's a shame we don't have Oregon and Ohio State meeting up because I would love to see a C.J. Walker and C.J. Walker matchup.
Hey, you never know. Could happen
tomorrow. David. Beyond Oregon, who seems to be actually, surprisingly, seems to be a consensus pick here among us to win this conference, who would the next best team be? And we may be at the end of the NCAA tournament picks for this conference, but who would the next best team be?
Yeah, well, what about the Buffs? You're going to laugh because I talk about them every year about how I really love what Todd Boyle is doing, but all five starters are back. They really had they had an unspectacular season, but in the second half of league play, I think they went 9-2 in their last 11, and so they ended the season playing well and with a lot of momentum, and with that many players coming back, I think the Buffs are going to be good and dancing this year. As far as who else, there's another team that I like, but they're more of a dark horse. I'll get to them later because I don't think they're on this level quite yet.
Well, Rocco, let me ask you about this Buffs team because I'm with David on this Colorado bandwagon here. McKinley Wright, Tyler Bay, this is a good Buffaloes team with everybody back and a good head coach. And why can't they at least be in the tournament, in the NCAA tournament, if not contend for the conference?
Well, yeah, I mean, the media out here, they certainly expect that. Oregon just barely edged out Colorado in the preseason media poll. And that was kind of a surprise to me. They were way above Arizona, who, just a few months ago, everybody had winning the Pac-12. So it's an interesting dynamic because there's always that off-season argument of what's more important, having all this experience back or a mixture of incoming talent that's just dominant talent. I mean, what's a better mix? Colorado's one of the top five out of the 353 teams in returning minutes. I think they're somewhere around 97% of their minutes back. You get guys like Evan Batty, who still has a high ceiling to improve. McKinley Wright, of course, player of the year candidate. Tyler Bay, great player. Had a great time talking with him last week. And Deshaun Swartz, a proven guy too. But I think the thing that's not proven is this team, we've all seen them play together. They haven't played together at a high level. And can they make that jump? I think that remains a question. And we won't know until later this year. And I'm kind of somewhere in the middle on that.
Well, Joby, I mean, 10-8, tied for fourth place at a conference is normally not that bad last year. They did win 23 games, if you include what they did in the NIT, a run to the quarterfinals. You joining in the bandwagon or no?
No, I'm not there. I feel they are returning a lot. It's very tempting. I think Colorado has a shot at the NCAA tournament. I'm not writing their ticket yet. I am not, but they'll be on the border. The Pac-12 is still not the ACC, even though it's not an amazing year for the ACC in the middle. Colorado still has to prove to me, and it's funny because I gave Illinois the benefit of the doubt in a similar situation, but I guess I'm biased. I've got that East Coast bias.
You just go to bed too early. You don't stay up and watch the Pac-12.
But they are returning a lot, and that should give Colorado a real shot at the NCAAs. They're certainly is not outrageous to say that Colorado could not only make the NCAAs, they might you know, if Oregon can't get their many pieces to work together, it's not outrageous to say they could challenge. But they got to prove it to me before I go on that bandwagon.
Salika, let me ask you here. If Colorado or Oregon, if neither one of them wins the Pac-12 title, who is the best team? Who would the next best team be?
If neither of those teams win, we're just forfeiting. But since we're looking for a third team, I'll probably be looking at Arizona State, that's also going to have some decent pieces returning from last year's team that went to the first four and actually made it to the first round after beating, I think it was St. John's in the opening round game in Dayton. But as far as who's coming back, you got Remy Martin, Rob Edwards, Romello White, and Kamani Lawrence.
Rocco, do you like that? Do you like the idea of maybe that Arizona State is a contender for the Pac-12 title?
Yeah, I don't see them being a contender for the title per se. I do think they're a contender to get back to Dayton, and maybe
I like that actually.
Third straight year
would be unbelievable. So yeah, they've got a JUCO player that Bobby Hurley's in love with. His name's Alonzo Verge. Just remember that. I think he's gonna crack the starting lineup. Stalika did a good job of listing off all the returning guys that we're familiar with. Cherry was a highly recruited guy. Had a decent freshman year. I think he could make a jump here sophomore year. So there is a chance they could compete for a title if everything breaks right for them. But they're last year, so 2 years ago, I think we saw what they're capable of. They got all the way up, I think, to, was it number one in the country after they beat Kansas and they beat Xavier?
Did they get that high?
Or were they top five?
They were high. I remember thinking they were third at one point.
But that team was a very, very guard-heavy team, and they were just lights out November and December, and then, of course, hit a wall playing against a lot of big teams in the conference like Oregon, like Arizona, like Utah, like Colorado, and they finished ninth in the league. It was unbelievable. They barely made Dayton. Last year, it was almost the opposite. They had one of the best rim protectors in Zylan Cheatham. Cheatham's now gone, and we're rewinding to 2 years ago, and we got a bunch of guards again. So it'll be really interesting because they're going back to that more of a team like we saw 2 years ago.
David, did you have a comment on them also?
Well, yeah, it just seems like they explode out of the gate. It's just, they make a big splash as early as Thanksgiving. They're beating ranked teams. They're beating Kansas, and then they get into the Pac-12 and finish eighth or ninth. Not only have they been in the first four the last couple of years, I think they've been in the opening round of the Pac-12 tournament. They haven't even gone straight into the quarterfinals in the last 2 years. So are we going to see that again? That is remarkable for them to get into the rankings, finish eighth or ninth, and then get into Dayton.
Well, the good news, if you're not an Arizona State fan, is that their start of the schedule here after game against Colorado to start things off, Central Connecticut State, Rider, Princeton, San Francisco, Louisiana, Prairie View. They're not gonna have the test like they had with the Kansas in the last couple of years. So,
and keep in mind that Colorado game is actually a non-conference game because it's actually going to be played in China.
Okay. Oh, thank you. Yeah,
what is the story of that? I heard that because the Pac-10 could not, or the Pac-12, excuse
Correct.
Me. Yeah. Well, go ahead, Rocco. What happened? I don't know.
Yeah, you're on the right path. They have the agreement with the Alibaba Group, is basically the Amazon of China, and they are a big sponsor of that game every year. Larry Scott helps coordinate it. He's the commissioner of the Pac-12. Anyway, long story short, they couldn't get another conference to come. In fact, last year was a real struggle. They had Yale come last year. So they just decided, let's just throw two Pac-12 teams out there, called a non-league game. So Colorado and Arizona State, probably everybody would agree, two teams in the upper half of the Pac-12 will actually get to play each other three times this year, and the China game will be a non-league game.
I believe that there's a single game opponent actually for Arizona State, unless they meet in the Pac-12 tournament, Rocco. But
is that right?
Okay. Yeah, but it is a home game for Arizona twice. State and against Colorado. They are not making the Colorado-Utah trip, but Joby, let me go here beyond Colorado, Oregon, Arizona State. Is there another team that you're looking at to challenge for the top spots in the Pac-12?
Well, you probably should have gone to Rocco on mine.
Well, I gave him a couple chances and he passed it up. So let's talk about his team. Let's talk about what the best is.
I don't know if Washington repeats in their in their way, but they've got a lot. I don't know what it is. They bring in some talented guys now. I mean, Jaden McDaniels is going to be freaking stud. Isaiah Stewart, Green transferring in, you know, was 5-star at one point. They have some pieces. I mean, they have some major pieces. This is similar to Oregon in a lot of ways, but Oregon at least has Pritchard, you know, as a foundational component, which is huge when you have a point guard who can do that. That's why I have Oregon ahead of Washington, despite some great pieces coming in. But if Washington puts it together, just the same way we said about Oregon, Washington could be really, really, really strong team. I think the pieces alone will guide them to wins that maybe they otherwise wouldn't get. So I think Washington is a tournament.
Stalika, you agree with that?
It does seem like Washington's not going to have quite the returning cast as they do last year, but I actually think the Pac-12 as a whole, not just Washington, could improve, possibly get as many as 4 or 5 bids. I know we're supposed to be getting into that a little later in the program, but it's not by accident that Washington ended up winning the Pac-12 regular season crown last year, but still found time to lose to Cal in the process.
Rocco, you did go to Washington. I got to give you a chance here to speak about them and respond, and whether you agree with that or the praise that we've heard for what this team's going to do this year.
Yeah, I agree with the praise. I think, you know, I got to watch all the games. They were on an Italy trip in August, and it was everybody was there except for Jaden McDaniels. And so it was unfortunate not to see him, but I think, you know, everybody knows about his hype. But this team is almost addition by subtraction. It's going to hurt to lose guys like Thibel and Noel, two guys that were adored in Seattle and off in the NBA right now. But you bring in 3 McDonald's All-Americans. If Quade Green can get his waiver approved, he might be able to play against Baylor in the opener, if not planning on the Hawaii tournament around Christmas time. But even without him, you're looking at a situation where McDaniels could actually play at the top of the zone. Isaiah Stewart, of course, being in the middle and having a deep front court is the key to this team. It's a lot different than last year because Timmons is still there who can plug and play. But there's some 2 really talented guys that redshirted last year. And the one that's really standing out and changed his body and is ready to break out is Nate Roberts. Probably not hearing a lot about him nationally, but I got a chance to spend about 20 minutes with Coach Hopkins last week and just pick his brain. And Nate Roberts is really ready to break out this year, and then Brian Penn Johnson being the other. It's going to allow for a lot of things to happen defensively, especially with the 2-3 zone. And so in Ham Wright, Knox Carter, those guys are now upperclassmen. I think there's a lot to be excited about with this team.
David, our colleague John Titel is not on with us. As we know, he did go to University of Arizona. I think we got to discuss this school, and maybe we got to discuss both on-court and off-court stuff when we get to them.
Yeah, I hate talking about off-the-court stuff because, like, what's the fun in that? I mean, we like to keep it on the court, but in this case, what happens off the court might affect them on the court. Notices of allegations are coming down. It looked like Arizona was going to get one at some point last year. At least from the outside looking in, it looked like Sean Miller wasn't even going to be back this year, but he's back there standing by him. Maybe it's nothing. I don't know. They do have a monster recruiting class, and I always have questions whenever there's new players, but there's no denying that they brought in a lot of talent. This is a team last year that missed the NCAA tournament since, I have the date here, for the first time since, correct me if this is wrong, 1178 AD was the last, or BC, 1178.
I think
BC
you're correct.
Was the last time Arizona missed the NCAA tournament prior to last year. I think they can get back there this year, assuming that they're eligible for it, and I think it's a pretty safe assumption that they will be. But again, I'm not like you guys. I can't really evaluate talent that I haven't really seen, but I know that they've got monster freshmen coming in, and the expectation is that they're going to be improved, at least to the point of being a tournament team again.
Yeah, Joby, do you agree with that? You know, is this Arizona team good enough to make the tournament?
Yeah, it's certainly good enough to make the tournament. Okay. But, you know, and the infractions committee will be getting to them in a month or two, so it won't be quick enough to eliminate their season. You know, that call's coming. Let's be you know, if it's already made its way to NC State and Kansas, Arizona, I'm shocked that Arizona and LSU haven't gotten the call yet. It's good enough. Are they going to be disjointed? If they can't make it, maybe you don't have to worry about Sean Miller and the NCAA because Sean Miller might be on the hot seat anyway.
Well, right, yeah.
And it's tough because I always have question marks about teams that are that young. And I've always have question marks where there's a lot of this off the court stuff going on.
Right.
And they're throwing both of them there at the same time. And it's hard for me to see the team coming together and gelling. Right. Rocco, do you see it? Do you see a way that Sean Miller can get these guys to young players like this, especially to ignore what's going on off the court?
Yeah. I think it's possible. I could see it going both ways, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, 2 years ago when all the DeAndre Ayton stuff came out, you know, middle of February, they actually started playing pretty well despite that. And I think sometimes when there's a lot of off the court issues and distractions, sometimes the best thing to do is just go out and play ball. And so, you know, if they take the right approach, and Sean Miller is certainly getting used to this, it could work out. And, you know, let's not forget, they did bring in Max Hazard, one of the best players from that UC Irvine team last year. He gets to come in as a grad transfer right away and start. They get a lights out shooter from Cornell, Stone Gettings, averaged 17 points. So they've got Chase Jeter and Ira Lee and and Hazard. So you've got some upperclassmen to go with the phenoms. So it could be a really nice mix. It's just, you know, there's going to be a lot of unpredictability with the you know, duration of the season.
Stalika, you are a Xavier guy, and as a Xavier guy, one of your team's arch rivals is Cincinnati. Whose head coach from last year is now out at UCLA. So I know you followed a lot of Mick Cronin. What do you think about the Bruins this year?
Well, I think it's not going to be nearly the tire fire that Mick Cronin inherited when he was at Cincinnati. Let's not forget, at year one, he actually had to convince Connor Barwin, who was a Bearcat football player, who was a standout at that time, just to give him a healthy body on the basketball roster at that time. But by the same token, the UCLA job had become toxic to the point where I think Jamie Dixon and several other notable coaches wouldn't touch the job, but Mick Cronin actually did get an offer he couldn't refuse. And hopefully it won't do long to get his foundation set at Westwood.
David, Mick Cronin's always entertaining to follow, and you know, there's a little bit, there's some talent here coming back. Prince Ali back for about the 500th season, and
I don't think it's going to happen this year. I do think that he will get it going there. I know that he wasn't their first choice. It was, as Stalika alluded to, there was a lot of other people that they went after and courted. But my thing about Mick Cronin is that, and I had been making this point on this show for years, was that I never thought he got enough recognition and credit just for the job he did at UC. It seems like they were a team that always finished higher than what their preseason expectations were. They'd been to 9 straight tournaments. The one thing was just that they were just stuck on getting past the round of 32. I think he only did it once. And because of that, I don't think that he really resonated to the point to where people appreciated just how good of a job he did. And I mean, this was a team that was in shambles. UCLA is nowhere near the train wreck that Cincinnati was when he took over. And I do think that within a matter of years, he'll have them as tournament regulars and in the top half of the bracket, maybe even protected seeds, maybe even a 1 seed, and they'll be going out in the round of 32.
To answer your question, 2012 was the year he made the Sweet 16 when they beat Florida State in the round of 32 and then ended up losing to eventual Final Four team Ohio State in the Sweet 16 that year.
Yeah.
Joby, is there anybody in the Pac-12 that we've not yet discussed that you think is at least has a shot, at a decent shot at making the NCAA tournament?
Oh, USC. USC. Okay. And Anfield.
I get to see them Saturday or Friday. Friday.
Yeah, I mean – yeah, they have some good grad transfers. Daniel Otome and Quentin Aldlesh, then Jonah Matthews sitting on the roster. They have some pieces to work with. I do think Andy Enfield's a good coach. I know a lot of people sometimes are down on him for crashing with superior talent. But USC's got a shot. They could make a jump up. I wouldn't pick them right now to do so. That's not to say it won't happen.
Rocco, arguably the best player in the Pac-12 is on a team that we have not yet discussed. What about Oregon State and Trey Tinkle?
That's the that team all I like.
Or is that all they've got is Trey Tinkle?
Well, yeah, Trey Tinkle, I mean, of course, well-established player, did not need to come back this year and decided ultimately to come back and do one last hurrah with Dad. He could have either got it in the NBA or a G League contract or at least go overseas. So it's good for the league that he's back. I think they have two other really good pieces. Ethan Thompson, Steven's little brother, has always been a solid piece, averaged almost 14 last year. And I was impressed with Kyler Kelly last year coming in as a transfer junior. He had some really nice pick and pop plays with Tinkle. And they got a nice two-man game that they play. I talked to Wayne Tinkle last week quite a bit about who else outside of those three guys can we look for. And he's had the key to the season is Peyton Dastrup. He's a transfer that sat out center from BYU. Apparently they're going to need that size down low to be able to match up with some of the size that you're seeing across the league, especially here in the top half. And Antoine Vernon's a guy that they're also counting on a lot to be a spark plug off the bench. So all in all, I think Oregon State's going to be competitive. I think they're good enough to knock off some teams. But personally, I do not see them as a tournament team.
No, I agree with you. I don't think that there's enough depth there, enough talent there to make the tournament, just no matter how good Tinkle and guys like Thompson are. David, is there anybody else worth discussing in this conference, or should we just move on to the America East or something like that?
We could move on to the America
East. Even without Stephen Thompson.
Go ahead, John.
John's frozen.
I think we lost John there. David, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, just kind of worth mentioning, I like this Oregon State team, and I consider them a dark horse tournament team. It wouldn't shock me if they didn't get there, but I'm going to pick them as kind of a long shot anyway. Wazoo and Cal with new coaches. Both those coaches have a lot of work to do. And so other than that, no, there isn't much worth talking about. Stanford is Jared Haas on the hot seat if Stanford doesn't at least make the NIT this year.
Well, let me throw a couple of things out here about each of those teams, though. First of all, you mentioned Cal, new head coach Mark Fox coming in. But Joby, nothing there for him this year, correct?
No. This is a – they had their shot when they had – when Jaylen Brown and when they had kind of the quick one, and Rab came in for kind of a one and done sort of round. Well, it's been like what, 3-4 years since that moment now, and so they've had Cal just can't seem to recover. They tried a quick fix, and it might have been a one step forward, two steps back during that process.
Rocco over in Washington State, great hire, a coach I really like. I'm surprised that he went from Columbia to San Francisco and this quickly to a Pac-12 school. But Kyle Smith coming in there, could he finally be the answer?
We'll see. Nerd ball is Kyle Smith's mantra here at San Francisco and now off to Wazoo. I like the way he approaches the game. He's a heavy, maybe the heaviest analytics guy there is in head coaching. And so he makes pretty much a lot of his lineup decisions and in-game decisions based on the data. And I think that's really interesting. As far as Wazoo goes in this roster, I thought he did a great job in the offseason. Without a lot of time, he convinced CJ Elby to stay, who's a pro prospect. He gets Deion James, who is out there, a transfer from Colorado State, to come over as a grad transfer. I think that's a really key piece. He averaged double figures in the Mountain West. Jeff Pollard's a solid returnee. Marvin Cannon was in the transfer portal. He gets him to stay. And Noah Williams was a commit to Buffalo with Nate Oates. When Nate Oates took the Alabama job, Noah decided to stay home and go to Wazoo. He's a Seattle guy. And I think he's an unheralded recruit. I think Washington missed out on him. And so I think he did an amazing job in the 5 months or 6 months that he's been there so far. They're not a tournament contender this year, but I think he's already made some really good progress early on.
That is the most in-depth and informed information about Wazoo I have ever heard in probably the last 3 years. Well done, Rocco.
Slika, we have not just mentioned at all yet the other Coach K out there in Utah. Is there anything that you see on this Utah team? It's a young team. Any chance for any surprises out of them?
This is going to be a very young Utah team because I was doing a brief roster scan. Only two players on that roster that are not either going to be freshmen or sophomores. So much like Virginia Tech, this is going to be a team that's going to be hitting the reset button, rebooting the computer, call it what you will.
But unlike Virginia Tech, they have a coach who has a system in place at that university already. I don't think it's going to be as hopeless at Utah in that regard. When you have Cal, I comment on already there. So I don't see last place being where the Utes wind up. They're in the bottom four, no doubt. But I actually think they have a chance to be on the upper half of that bottom four.
Rocco, let me show one other team we haven't discussed yet, which is Stanford. They've got some pretty good guards. I mean, they have nobody down low, but they've got some good guard play at the center, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, if you're not counting De Silva as down low, then I agree.
De Silva's it, really. But
great. He's a good ball player. De Silva and Dejon, very good ball players. They were both at Media Day. But I think, I actually think, you know, we're now on to, I think this is year four of the Haas era. I think the seats maybe going to start getting warm this year. Obviously Stanford academics first, but pretty good basketball tradition in the last 25 years. So, I'm really interested to see how this plays out. I don't see as much upside in Stanford as I do in a lot of these other, bottom of the Pac-12, if you will, programs. So, hopefully they prove me wrong. I like the guys they have. It's just, they really haven't done much in the last 3 years.
Well, I guess on that note, let me run through each of you again with the question of how many bids does this conference get, and also any other thoughts you may have on the league. And, Sleek, let me start with you.
I know I hinted this earlier. I would say 4 or 5 might be the ceiling, but I do think we get another circumstance where a prize team does come out of the Pac-12 tournament, so I think they'll end up with 4 bids, but the only ones I'm sure of at this point are going to be Oregon and Colorado. I would take 2 out of 3 from a group of Arizona State, and Washington.
I agree with that a little bit. I think there are going to be at least 3, maybe 4. Probably, I think there's going to be 4 bids out of this league. I think USC, Joby kind of convinced me that they're going to be in that pack. In that mix, at least. But Joby, how many bids do you see? Any other thoughts you have?
I'm going to steal from my ACC preview line and say 3.75, given there is a 0.25% chance that Arizona will will be sanctioned by the NCAA, or at least voluntarily sanction themselves once the mess starts coming around. They go, well, we'll take this year off like Louisville and Syracuse did in years past.
Rocco, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are, I think Oregon and Washington are going to get in. I actually would be a little surprised if Washington doesn't. I know on paper it doesn't look good from a returners and experience standpoint, but I'm telling you, this is a much more talented team. And then in the next group, I think one of the four, excuse me, two of these four will get in. Arizona certainly has the leg up, most talent, best balance, but as Joby mentioned, some variables involved. Colorado, we've talked about them. I could probably pencil them in for today. But then Arizona State, obviously, really good chance to get back in. And you know, I'm not holding my breath, but I think UCLA's got a shot. I think they get a 4 guys back from injuries last year. Mick Cronin brings a new flavor to the Pac-12. Very defensive-minded. you know, focused on block shots and wearing teams down and forcing everybody to shoot twos. I think it's going to be really interesting with UCLA. And if they hit the right stride, then maybe they can pull something off. So anyway, out of those four teams, I say two more, and I'll average it out at four bids.
David, you want to finish this off here?
I'm going to go with five, simply because my dark horse, Oregon State, I can't get them in otherwise. So I'm going with them, Zona, Colorado, Oregon, and Washington. I like those five. Well, I like four of them for sure. Oregon State, it's more of a good faith holding my breath pick. My final thought is that I want to see Bobby Hurley and Mick Cronin get in the biggest blow up in the history of the game at some point this year, at least once, hopefully more than once.
That will be fun when those two meet. Just a quick look at the schedules here, if we could find them. Stalika, when do they play each other? Do you have that in front of you?
I don't have that in front of me. But actually, I was going to add another final thought as it relates to us scheduling this year.
Okay.
And that's going to be with the Chase Center in San Francisco opening up for the Warriors this year. They are actually going to have a quadruple header on December 21, where both Stanford and California will have games during the day. And at nighttime, Arizona will be playing St. John's, and the nightcap will actually involve St. Mary's in Nevada.
Yeah, was Santa Clara not available? Was St. Mary's, were they not available?
Why is Mary's.
Is that St. the other Mary's Bay Area yeah. team? Okay, yeah, thank
this
you.
This is
yeah.
the Al Attles Classic, is how it's being branded.
San Jose State didn't get invited, unfortunately.
Well, it's because of that floor of theirs.
Well, they've actually improved the floor this year, we're going to get to that when we talk Mountain West. But just real quick to answer that question, the UCLA-Arizona State games are February 6th at Arizona State, February 27th at UCLA. But on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us for our Pac-12 podcast. On behalf of David Griggs and Rocco Miller up here, Joby Fortson and John Slica down on the bottom row, I'm Chad Sherwood. Keep an eye on the website. We've got a lot more content to come, and we'll talk to you again real soon.